when I was young, I really wanted to know what's the purpose of life. I had no answer. I tried to figure out a way to get an answer. I also failed. But along the way, somehow, I think I got an answer. And the answer is to pursue happiness. So make sure, you know, every day think about, are you happy or not? This is the purpose of life, to pursue happiness. But how to make sure you are happy? That's a different question. If you can make others happy, you will be happy. And also that happiness is very sustainable. So to build a business, if you make your customer happy, you will be happy. As a CEO, also I'll be happy. I also found one thing interesting. Those engineers, if they are very happy, the code quality is pretty good. If they are not happy, let them better go back to home.
Happy engineers, good code.
Good code, exactly. I think that's kind of what I learned is about the happiness. So that's why this is down day one. That's our company culture. So like today, every day when I wake up, I always think about, first of all, ask myself the question, do I feel happy or not? If not, why is that? Also, I want to make sure every employee, every day when they wake up, think about, ask about the same question. If you're not happy, is personal related or business related? Figure out the root cause, come up with a solution. Ultimately, if you're not happy, ideally, no need to come to the office. Because everybody around you, they can feel like that.
From Foundation Capital, this is How to B2B a CEO, the show about how to scale your enterprise startup and how to grow from founder to CEO. I'm Ashok Garg, general partner at Foundation Capital. Glassdoor recently released its annual list of the 100 best companies to work for in the U.S. This year, the top tech company to work for isn't Google, Facebook, or Airbnb. The best tech company and the second best company overall to work for is Zoom, which most of you probably go to for your enterprise video communications needs. Joining me on this episode to talk about how he built a company that people are so happy to work at is none other than Eric Yuan, Zoom's founder and CEO. Thank you very much, Eric, for joining us today. We're really excited to have you on our podcast.
My pleasure. Thank you.
So, Eric, I wanted to start a little bit by talking about your personal story. So tell me, you know, where you grew up and how you came to be the founder and CEO of Zoom.
Sure. So I was born in China, and I was in Beijing 1994, 1995, 1996. I wanted to start an internet company because I had some publishing house industry experience. I thought about, wow, that would be cool if we can sell a book online. But back in China, there's no internet infrastructure. I really couldn't figure out a way to charge customers, to deliver the books to the customers. At that time, you know, internet here in Silicon Valley was so popular, right? So American Online, Yahoo, Netscape, is sort of like the first wave of internet revolution. I just cannot wait. I really wanted to come here to take a look. From China, you know, at that time, you know, to come here, I need to get a visa. It's really hard. I tried 8 times.
The next eight times.
8 times.
Wow.
The next attempt, finally, I was successful. I came here in 1997, summertime. I really like the weather here, actually. And also the ecosystem here is awesome. I joined WebEx as one of the first several founding engineers. Ultimately, I became vice president of engineering. When I came here, you know, WebEx was very small, 2 co-founders, around now 10 engineers, and no marketing team, no sales, you know, nothing. Luckily, the company WebEx went public year 2000, and later on in 2007, the company sold to Cisco. I was there for another 4.5 years as Cisco's corporate vice president. I really wanted to build the next generation collaborating solution. That's why I left Cisco to start Zoom 2011.
So what changed in 2011? What made the timing right for you to quit and start Zoom?
Customer, they really complained almost every day. I was so frustrated. I would say, wow, I had to fix the problem. Because all the problems customers share with me are the brand new problems. When we built WebEx, we never thought about that. You know, when we built WebEx, we were trying to focus on one use case, where you and I, in the audio conference call, how to share my PowerPoint, how to share my desktop content to you with a remote participant. That's it. But 14 years later, customer talk about the, you know, one unified solution, global availability, video quality, mobility, all the new problems. There's no way to tweak your existing solution like WebEx to get there. The only way is to fix all those problems is to build something from ground up.
A clean architecture.
Exactly. But by doing that, for sure, you might cannibalize your existing solution, WebEx. And I tried hard, to convince others, you know, to rebuild that. But, you know, Cisco was unwilling to change its collaboration strategy. So it took me 1 year finally say, I'm going to leave. So that's why I tried 2010 and I left 2011.
Tell me how you got started.
After I left Cisco WebEx, the first question I asked myself, what kind of company I want to work for in the next 10 to 20 years? Like, you know, start up a long journey.
Yes.
Cannot think about overnight success for 5 years. I need to make sure in the next 10 to 20 years, which company I want to work for. That's company culture is very important. So I need to define the company culture on day one, just myself. That's the first thing. The second thing is how to start, meaning where to hire those engineers, you know, how to get the funding. And, you know, I talked with some angel investors in Silicon Valley, all those friends. My goal was to raise $2 million. And the good news, I raised $3 million seed funding and also defend our company culture to focus on happiness and spend all the time on those two when I started.
Talk about so the decision to be a solo founder as against having a co-founder, and how did you go about the process of raising your first $3 million?
If you start a company, if you're very young, ideally you have co-founders, right? Because, you know, it's very lonely, you know, start a company. But given, you know, when I started a company already, you know, 41 years old, and there's also pros and cons to have a co-founder. I think I like simplicity. Everything I like a very simple thing. You know, for sure, you know, just the sole founder is easier, right? For anything very critical, important, I do not need to spend time discuss with the co-founders. But for sure, it's sometimes also challenging. But in terms of raising the money, I don't want to talk with any, like, top-tier VCs when we started. I'd like to go get the money from those friends I trust. You know, because to build a company, very likely you might pivot, right? And if you raise the money from those top VCs when you were very small, when you pivot the company, they may not like it. Because there's so many VCs, you know, great VCs, great investors. But how to find those VCs, investors, who really not only invest into your business, but also invest in you? That's really important. Right, but it's hard, you know, to when you were small, right? That's why I say we started from angel investors and all those people I know before.
How long did that process take?
Oh, that's pretty fast, I would say, within 1 month.
So you're off to a great start. Within a month, you have $3 million in the bank. You have a culture defined. You really know what product you want to build because you've worked in the space. So what's next?
Next is just the heads down to the product side. So all the engineers, myself, I was the only one employee who did not write a code. Everybody else are going to write a code. That's how we started. And because we understand the problem and just a laser focus on the product side. Because the market we are going to enter into was very crowded. We really want to build something is wow. Otherwise, you know, if you enter into a crowded market, if your product is so-so, no, nobody's going to try that, right? That's why we spend lots of time to build the product, try to deliver a wow experience. Looking back, I think we should spend more time to focus on the platform layer, make it more solid.
Cedric, I want to probe this a little bit because you clearly have a strong philosophy and a belief around bake the product, take the time, make sure it's ready, and deliver a product that is a joyful experience that delivers happiness to customers on day one. At the same time, currently in Silicon Valley, there's this whole culture of lean startups, build something, release it, and then iterate quickly. And you see a lot of startups, especially coming out of incubators, that are launching the product well before it's ready.
I think those two will not conflict each other. That's why every company is different. The business we are going to enter into is a very crowded market. very well established competitors, right? It's not something dramatically new, right? If you are going to enter into that market, you have to. You cannot see announce something. You might have a huge potential, but however you announce something just not great, I would say don't do that. If you are enter into a brand new market, you do not have a lot of competitors. I totally agree with you, right? Just have a minimum, you know, viable the product, right? Just to announce that, you know, get a feedback quickly, you know, the improve that. That's always good, but just depends on which market you are going to enter into.
Yeah. And so, how long did it take you from seed funding to launch the product to your first few users?
I think around 2 years.
2 years.
Yeah.
You're launching the product. You've had 70 engineers work on this. You've been at it for 2 years. You're trying to get the first few customers to use you. Talk about that experience.
We were very lucky, and Stanford Continuing Studies Group was our first customer, and they really liked our service. Actually, back then, our service was not even fully ready yet. And after they became our paid customers, you know, really encouraged us. Okay, if Stanford can become a customer, why not target other colleges as well? You know, very soon we get to other colleges also, you know, became our customer. After our founding team, we, you know, got the three customers. You know, at that time, we thought we might be ready. So we hired the first sales and a second and third, and we stopped, we paused. Could those three sales guy close more deals or not, right? And after they close more deals, and we hired the fourth, fifth, and sixth rep, and then pause. Could they close more deals? Yes, we doubled the size again and again. And we still do not have marketing team though. Only 3 years ago, we established marketing team on purpose. Because if you already have a sales team, you already have a product, because luckily our product has a network effect, right? You cannot use Zoom by yourself. If you create a marketing team too early, may not be a good thing. Because you do not know those customers, users, they really like your product because other people told them your product is good, or because you see your billboard, your radio ads, right? It's essentially they try the product based on your ads. Guess what? Your product may not work. And that's the worst case. You spend money, get some users, they do not like your product.
We'll be right back.
If you're listening to this podcast, you're probably the kind of nerd who understands that encryption is one of the most popular and effective ways of protecting data. But even if encrypted at rest and in motion, did you also know that data are still vulnerable to attacks when an application starts to run? Wow, you are a nerd. When was the last time you were on a date? Well, that's where Fortanix comes in. Not with finding you a date. No technology can do that. What Fortanix does do is protect your data even when it's in use. We call it runtime encryption. With runtime encryption, your data are encrypted and safe even when in use by applications. Fortanix, we can't help you secure a date, but we can help you secure your data. Visit Fortanix.com to learn more about runtime encryption, our provable, portable, preventive security solution.
So you had sales but no marketing. And you had the benefit of being a network effect product. So every customer was sort of getting other customers to try the product. But tell me more about how you found the first 100 customers. The first three you called.
Yeah.
And you got them.
Yeah.
You found a pattern in education.
Yeah.
And you said, is that a vein of gold that you started to dig into?
Yeah. So our philosophy was that after getting the first three customers, our goal is, okay, great. And we have a new sales rep, right? So try to get the pursue new customer. At the same time, from overall from business perspective, I told all our team members, let's make sure do all we can to spend more time, more resources to care about existing customers rather than just focusing on pursuing new customers. By doing that, those three or four or five existing customers, they are very happy. Every time they use Zoom with other customers, they always share very positive news to them. Hey, I found a new service, Zoom. It works so well. And with that, guess what? We get more and more customers because the existing customers are very happy. And very soon we have more customers. They call us. They say, hey, I heard about Zoom. We are using Zoom with your customers. You know, can we try that? Can we try that? So we got so many incoming leads. That's one thing. Another thing is we also have a freemium product. You know, anyone just go to our website, it's very easy, also very generous, right? You know, two-person meeting is always free. More than two, up to 50 participants. Back then, now it's 100 participants. All the features for free, but we limited the meeting duration to 40 minutes.
I remember that, you know. I forget what provider we had when I was at Foundation 5 years ago, and we used to use some other provider, and I was the only Zoom user at Foundation at the time. And the meetings would always come to an end after 45 minutes, and I would dial back in. But eventually, I convinced our administrative partner to change to Zoom.
Yeah. So that's exactly the philosophy. I like a customer, try your product. If they really like your product, if your product can deliver value, be patient. They are going to come back to pay you. You know, may not be this quarter, this month, this year. Sooner or later, they will. Whenever a customer canceled, even one customer, they buy one account, which was only $9.99 a month. Anyone who canceled the service, I personally send an email to them, try to understand why. By doing that, many of them became a very loyal customer. We established a greater relationship.
So every time someone who was paying you $10 a month canceled, they got a personal email from Eric, the CEO.
That's true. And sometimes also scheduled a Zoom meeting with them, because sometimes they do not believe this is email from me. And I need to convince them that's indeed from me. By doing that, they also share with me why they canceled. And I made a lot of friends by doing that.
Wow. So truly, you know, you lived the obsessive customer focus idea. I mean, a lot of people talk about it, but you are living it every day.
But that's exactly, you know, the happiness philosophy, right? If you make your customer happy, your company be happy, you'll be happy. Fundamentally, that's the number one important thing than anything else. If your customer not happy, no matter what you do, that don't matter anymore. Sooner or later, you have a huge problem.
You know, you very early on defined this notion of happiness is going to be the core value for the company. As the company started to grow, how did you implement that? So what have you done that is different at Zoom from anything else you've seen that you think is making people happier here?
It's a great question. It's very hard, right? So you have 50 people, 100 people is relatively easy. You know everybody, right? You have a huge influence. But you have, when you further grow the business, you see we have over, 1,500 people worldwide. You know, more like start of the, recruiting process, right? Make sure, in terms of recruiting new employees, our strategy is focused on internal referrals, right? If I like you and you did a great job, and why not refer some of your friends to come to join us? 60% of our newly hired employees are coming from the internal referrals. Then also after they join us, we try all we can, right, to kind of share with them the company culture value, all has meeting, and also even all the team meeting, every time we talk about that, right? Essentially, let them realize the reason why you come to Zoom is we have a mission, right? We want to deliver happiness to our customers. And also, we focus on a lot of the smaller things, like, hey, we have a happiness crew, right, from all the branch office. We have a chief happiness officer as well. And we like you learn more, you reimburse the books, for you, or you maybe buy the book for your family. And we also try to make sure our culture is open, transparent. You know, any questions, anything, just feel free to tell us. Because ultimately, we really want to employ know that we care about them. That's our common value, care, right? And if you really care about them, and they are going to trust you, right? When they trust you, they will probably share a lot of things to you if they are not happy. And then if you are not happy, we try to take a step back to understand why is that. Maybe we have a process issue, maybe you have a system problem, maybe your teammates did something wrong. As long as they tell us, trust us, we know the problem, we can know the root cause.
So let me push that a little bit further. So, if you're Google or Facebook or any of the other large Silicon Valley companies, while happiness is not necessarily their core value, they're also throwing money at this problem, free lunches, free massages.
Money
free
will not bring you your happiness.
Exactly.
It's a short-term thing.
What are there one or two examples of things you have done at Zoom that are radically different from what other large companies in the Valley have done or other successful companies have done?
I think several things I think we did, differently you know, first of all, in terms of hiring, right? So we focus on hiring those people with the potential, right? We don't want to hire those people, very experienced executives, right? From other company, very successful. That's not our style. You know, quite often in early stage, you know, some friends, some investor also mentioned, hey, you got to hire someone from other company, very senior executive, great experience. I always say, no. We want to hire someone who can grow themselves along with the company grows, with the potential. That's a hiring practice. I think one thing different.
So hiring based on potential as against experience,
yes,
is sort of a core attribute of your company.
Yeah, we want them can grow themselves because by doing that, they're also very loyal to the company. And otherwise, you already gain an experience. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it may not be good. The reason why every startup company is different, if you can, you know, leverage what you learned before, just to leverage your experience, you do not want to learn new things, right? To apply that to your new startup company, guess what? It's very dangerous, right? Because every company is different, right? Your experience may not help, might hurt us. So that's one thing. Another thing, we try to keep everything open, honest here. Like all hands meeting, we let our employees submit the questions anonymously, right? Before all hands meeting. You know, so our philosophy is we should assume everything, every employee know that, right? You know, sometimes you do not talk about that, like your salary, your package, but we got to assume everything else, employee will know that. Keep everything transparent, you know, share everything. And we spend a lot of time trying to make sure the employee, essentially we build a trust. I think one thing we did a little bit of different today is do all we can to build a trust. Make sure the employee trusts us, you know, we trust the employee, I trust my direct report, they trust us. You know, how to, you know, build a trustworthy environment. That's very, very important. Otherwise, see, like a startup company, every day, no matter how hard you're working on something, you have so many problems. Every day.
And I think right? That's fair.
Yeah, the problem is if they do not trust you, oh, you work for a sales team, they found a problem, see, in marketing team, product team, they are not going to share with you.
Tell me a little bit about what's next for you personally. You know, what is the challenge ahead of you that you're looking forward to sort of conquering?
I think that's a great question. So for sure, in the next 15 years, I want to further grow our business, you know, and to hopefully, you know, next several years, every business, they are going to use Zoom, right? We do all we can to deliver happiness to customers, as many customers as possible. That's more like my goal from the business side. Hopefully, employees also enjoy working on Zoom. So that is still my number one priority. But the challenge will be, I really want to help to make the world a better place, right? And today, I'm building a company, Zoom, right, to help the customers. But assuming tomorrow you retire, what are you going to do? I would say today, look at the whole world. I feel like in many cases, there's no trust between the countries or maybe mm-hmm. between the parties or between the people, right? How to do something to help, right? Because, you know, I was born in China, right? I live here more than 20 years. I really like the culture here and also understand the Eastern culture, right? How to do something, contribute to that, to build a trust, right? This is very important. I think if I retire today, you know, I really want to spend more time. Overall, you want people, whole world, you know, contribute to the world, right? So more like a personal story. For anything important, I always talk with my father first, try to get his opinion, advice, should I do it or not, every time. Even when I started a company in 2010, I wanted to start a company to live. And we had a family reunion. And, my brother, he lives in New Jersey. I live here, and my young sister still lives in China. I went back and went to Beijing, had a family reunion, and talked with my father. I told my father, I'm going to leave Cisco. I was corporate VP there. Cisco paid you very well. It's a great company, great brand. And I thought my father would say no, because, you know, I know actually my father, relatively speaking, very conservative. I told him why I wanted to leave, all those kind of reasons. My father gave me answer, yes, good idea. Please do it. I do all I can to support you. Because I have still young kids, you know, my father told my mom as well to so many things to support you. He's very healthy. He said, I'm very healthy, you know, it's just a 6'8". I can do so many things to help you. Just don't forget, don't worry about everything else. And 2 months after that, and in early morning, I got a call from my young sister. And suddenly, you know, my father's heart attack, I think in a swimming pool. And just several weeks later, you know, I immediately flew back and it passed away. You know, I think that's why life is short. You know, every time I think about it, it's really hard to talk about that. Yeah.
That's why,
when you make a treatment, you want to share with your father. You cannot do that anymore. Sorry, very emotional.
Thank you for sharing that. Thank you, I really appreciate it.
That's why every day you got to work hard. Make sure to do all you can. Don't let your father down, right? He will watch out of you every day, so.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Eric, for joining us today. We really appreciate the time, and this has been a fascinating and very valuable conversation.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
That's it for this episode. You can find past episodes and subscribe to future ones on iTunes, Stitcher, and SoundCloud. How to B2B a CEO is brought to you by Foundation Capital, an early-stage venture capital firm with 27 IPOs, including Netflix, Lending Club, TubeMogul, and Sunrun. I'm Ashu Garg, a general partner at Foundation Capital. I'm passionate about helping B2B entrepreneurs who are trying to solve hard problems. So if this podcast speaks to you, if you are interested in growing from a technical founder into a business leader, drop me a line. Thanks, and see you next time.